This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where I give you access each week to the world's greatest athletes and executives about their personal and professional playbook and what has made them champions on and off the field.
Yankees win!
That contract extension was for $176 million.
Touchdown! And a title for the Patriots!
I can't believe it!
I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer. This is Dave Meltzer, CEO of Sports One Marketing, and it's Entrepreneurs the Playbook, and I am blessed to be with one of my favorite people in the world. I mean, I adore you, and if I was younger and better looking, I would try to steal you away from your gorgeous husband. That's how much I love you. I texted Warren a picture of us.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and I said, oh, I love her. And but unfortunately, probably loves Warren more like everyone else.
No, first of all, you are doing amazingly well, and the fact that you came all the way up here to Bristol, Connecticut to do
ESPN.
This, I owe you big. So
no,
thank you.
I owe you. Well, we'll start. This show's about the playbook to success. And, you know, we were just discussing how everyone perceives things as perfect. You know, when I was even CEO of Lee Steinberg, people go, oh, you know, Mr. McGuire, I want to be you. That's the perfect job. And I will tell you, the best day of my life is when I switched and started doing sports marketing instead of sports agentry. And so I was kind of wanted to know your playbook, and we'll start maybe in college, you know, where you were at IU and what you were doing there and kind of your playbook to success to become the great female anchor of ESPN.
Let's now use a real title, which is the word great is not at all in that. Gosh, it's funny because I graduated from Indiana University, Hoosier for life, in 1995.
And Bobby Knight was still there?
Yes, Bob Knight was still there. Rare form, absolutely. we didn't really have a football team, so and they're playing much better now. But no, Indiana was my dream type of school, not necessarily where I'd planned to go, because Big Ten, big sports programs, just big,
right?
Beautiful campus, rolling hills, just perfect college experience. And I'm an Army brat, so I lived all over the world and didn't really have a home per se, and ended up at Indiana because we moved to Indianapolis before my senior year, like August of my senior year of high school. It was pretty brutal.
Wow.
So in-state tuition, Indiana, Purdue, Ball State, those are my choices. Mom and dad making, you know, Army money, you're not getting rich.
Right.
No scholarship offers. Okay, those are your choices. And it was the best decision of my life. It also was like an awakening because I had always done well in high school, but never really had to learn how to study smart enough to get by. It's about it, as I found out once I got to Bloomington. So I just really struggled. I didn't know how to study when you're one of 500 people in a class and you couldn't raise your hand, and there's no homework assignments, it's tests.
Well, you seem really personality based, right? You told me, I love talking to people. This is what I love engaging.
Yeah.
So I can see, because I know I have the same personality, and it was the opposite for me. I went to this tiny college, right? And then so 1,500 people, I had a huge high school. So what do you think, you know, for people like us that are outgoing and fun, and you're one of 500 and you don't have a personal relationship with your professor, because we use our charisma a lot. And I'm sure in high school.
Well, no, I was a different person.
Oh, tell me.
I was so crazy shy. And I've told the story a lot recently, to the point where like my parents were calling doctors.
Really?
Like, what's wrong with this child? Why won't she talk? And I talked to all my family and, you know, close friends. I was just painfully shy. So that was when in hindsight, I began to come out of my shell, because I had to survive. I had to realize that my study habits just weren't, well, I was on academic probation.
Wow.
For 3 semesters below 2.0.
Really?
Long, long story. I won't bore you, but I kind of fell through the cracks and they didn't keep track of me. And I was afraid. I thought it would go away magically instead of addressing it. I didn't know how to address it. I was a disaster.
Did you tell your parents you were doing poorly?
No.
You
oh,
just
God, no. No.
So they were busy doing their stuff.
They just
in-state tuition.
I would get the report card or whatever, and I'd change the D to a B.
Really?
And I'd be like, oh, I was just bored, and I was tracing it, and I'd send it home. Like, no,
nice.
It was terrible. But that was the worst thing I ever did, honestly. I was such a perfect, annoying kid. But I had no clue.
Yeah.
And I wasn't partying. I wish I had. With those kind of grades, I wish I had.
Well, then you'd look my age if you did. This is what happened when you party in college right here.
I just was so overwhelmed, but in a very innocent way.
Wow.
And had to go in I guess, charisma. But no, I was genuine. I had to go in and ask for help in a couple of classes. And they gave me a shot. And I barely passed and barely graduated. It was a huge, huge lesson. And from there, it was a lot of luck. I interned, I had non-paying jobs, and then a guy that I had met while waiting tables at a steakhouse in Bloomington, Indiana, ends up that he was the head of the Indiana University Foundation, which gives scholarship money to needy kids. I wasn't that needy per se, but yeah, he saw my heart and my drive to become a broadcaster. And he, months later, after I graduated, referred me to an old fraternity brother of his who was the GM of a station in South Bend, Indiana. And that's how I got my start.
Wow.
Because I was personable when I was waiting tables. And I look back, like, that's what saved me, is being a friendly, outgoing, kind of caring
positive
person
energy
that outweighed the grades. And so, sometimes one meeting, it's cliche, right?
Yeah.
One meeting can change your life.
So I talk about that all the time. A lot of people tell me about luck.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived a lot of my life until I lost everything in my 30s with this Midas title. Like, oh, everything Dave Meltzer touches turns to gold. I made money. I was a millionaire 9 months after I graduated law school.
Wow.
And people tell me, oh, you're so lucky. But I truly believe that hard work meets opportunity.
Yeah.
And it was more than that. It was that I was an optimist like you. I was kind to my future self, as Lee Steinberg taught me. And I treated everyone, whether I was waiting tables or at, I wanted to leave, my mom taught me, every person, place, or thing better than I found it.
Yeah.
And somehow I believe that became my luck, was really just, I was at service of people. I was really just trying to help everyone. And then people started wanting to help me. And
yeah,
I ended up in these great jobs. You know, my law professor is like, Dave, you shouldn't be a lawyer. This internet company, and I could tell you the same way, this is luck, but you intern places, you worked really hard, you persevered from challenges that were there. What do you think creates luck?
Whoa, what do you think creates luck?
I told you it'd be an easy interview. Sorry.
Thanks a lot.
I lied.
Usually I ask the questions. Right. I don't like this whole format. I don't know. That's okay. A really, really good question.
Do you believe in karma? I
believe in karma. Sometimes karma takes too long to kick in, let me tell you.
That's right.
In my opinion, no names necessary.
Right. Sooner or later, the truth comes out, but sometimes it takes lifetimes, right?
Right. I honestly believe, and I have a strong faith. I believe that everything happens for a reason. Good, bad, ugly, whatever. I really do. The key is how you choose to handle it. And janitors come around the corner. Sorry about the noise. Like I say to my kids all the time, happiness is a choice. And it can be really difficult sometimes. And if your friend is mean to you on the playground, like that's not nice. But are you going to let her ruin your day? Because if you do, yeah, shame on her. But that's on you for allowing someone else to ruin your day. And I've had to then take my own advice professionally. It is totally a choice, in my opinion, because everybody has crap.
Yep.
Crap hits everyone at one point or another. Sometimes it's a lot of crap, sometimes it's just a little bit. And I now know that I wouldn't be here today without the crap, without having to change schools my senior year of high school, without being mortified and embarrassed at Indiana University because I was lost academically and was told that I was an embarrassment to the university by the dean of the school.
And ended up being the commencement speaker.
20 years and 3 days later, asked to be the commencement speaker, which was so emotional because they forgave me almost. Most importantly, I forgave myself for, again, just not living up to my potential then, being afraid to succeed almost because I was embarrassed to go get help. And I don't know, I fall on my face so many times. The key to me with luck and everything else is fear. And I've been so afraid so many times every day, frankly, before I go on the air. I've been on the air for 23 years. And every day I get those feelings like I don't eat really well before every show. Not that I'm scared. I'm excited, a little bit nervous. Butterflies are good. But I have finally learned to push through that fear. And I think Nick Saban, or probably some philosopher, but Nick Saban said it a couple years ago. I use it with my kids too. The key to greatness, get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Right.
And I am really, really comfortable now being uncomfortable, whether it's feeling nervous before a show, whether it's having to have a difficult conversation with someone. I'm remodeling my house right now. These contractors are from hell.
They're in the backyard.
I'm ready to kill them. Like, I'm not afraid of anything anymore. I don't always feel good doing it, but I know that if you do it the right way and handle people nicely and with kindness, that it usually eventually works out. I am very lucky, but more so I feel blessed.
You are
because
blessed.
I know that there is a higher being. I don't know that I deserve all the success that's come my way. Oh. Even though I've worked hard, God has taken care of me, and I sometimes it's overwhelming.
Well, I feel the same. It's interesting because I was talking to our producer coming in here, and I said years ago I came with Warren to ESPN, and I was really nervous. And, you know, building my own brand, creating my own entity. I still, though, I said, wow, I kind of feel nervous. And we're friends. But I when I was sitting in the lobby waiting for you to get off of the set, I was same kind of thing. Uncomfortable, nervous. Yeah. And I was like, well,
but I think it's because we care.
Right. Well, you want to be the best you can.
You want to be the best
enjoy
no matter what.
The pursuit of
and then
potential.
You see me and I'm like, I'm walking around with the rainbows. And you're like, oh, no reason to be nervous. But that's how I want people to feel around me. Because that's when I'm most comfortable is when people are casual,
yeah.
You know, and, but I do think it's a good nervousness because we care
right.
And we'll
Bobby
never
Knight,
stop caring.
I think Bobby Knight said that too, something about he likes when his players are really nervous because he knows they really care.
Yeah. Yeah. And also on the other side, with sports and stuff, I had coaches. My dad said once, cause I didn't handle some of the screaming and yelling and the harshness. One of my trainers, I was doing the equestrian thing and she was brutal. And I would leave every lesson on Saturday mornings crying. Oh. I mean, they were hard, hard workouts. And she screamed and yelled and then no compliments. And my dad said, when she stops yelling, be worried.
Right.
That's when she's given up on you. So take it as a compliment and go kill it. No excuses.
That's awesome. Now let's talk about your job a little bit because we've had these similar careers where we were in these dream jobs.
Yeah.
And I always tell my family, you know, it's not like it looks, you know, something it makes it worse when everyone's telling you, I want your job. I want to do this. And we just sat and waited 2 hours because you were giving back. You're on the Pat Tillman Foundation board. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, the Veteran Day special. And at the last minute, they ask you, could you do this for the veterans? And people don't realize how long some of these things take. And you have 3 children, a family, mm-hmm. a drive home, your other cohorts, we won't mention names. They drive all the way to Boston for 2 hours and the traffic doubles every 10 minutes.
Exactly.
I swear. Tell us a little about the inside of what it feels like to everyone think you have this perfect life and realities there that look, you have to still work out and do these things.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, when I was getting ready to do the commencement speech in May of 2015 at Indiana, it was Monday before the Saturday commencement and I had done nothing because that's typical me, wait till the last second, procrastinate, but the adrenaline rush is kind of what makes me at the end
succeed
and perform. But my dad said to me, you know, people see this TV, that this face on your TV screen and they think everything is just perfect. And he's like, are you willing to be honest? And that was the first time I was really publicly honest about my academic struggles. And then from then on, because throughout my career, there's been so many ups and downs. But that's why, and I've been at ESPN for 10 and a half years. I started in February of 2007 and I can't believe it. When I was 12 years old, I announced to my family I wanted to work at ESPN. I wanted to be a sportscaster.
Wow.
12 years old. So now...
And who's your favorite sportscaster? Was it Chris? Like everyone else?
No. I didn't really have a favorite.
You did. To be a sportscaster.
I did. I wanted to be like some of them.
Yeah.
There weren't that many to choose from. Certainly Robin Roberts.
Yeah.
Very few women. But in general, I just wanted to talk about athletes and the stories. And I was amazed at a young age at their strength and how... You're a 100-meter dash at the Olympics. You've worked your whole life. How do you not vomit right there?
Right.
Like when it's all right. Like I was in awe and I wanted to tell those stories. So I just knew I didn't care who I was like me.
Yeah.
But I mean, the ups and the downs have been tremendous. But
did you ever want to quit?
Yes.
Yeah.
A million times.
Do you have one story you can share with me?
Yeah. I was in Indianapolis and this is in 97, 98.
Yeah.
Loved it. Top 25 market. It was my first sports job. I was in news before because nobody would let me into sports. And long story short, I was making like 18 grand a year in a top 25 market.
Oh.
And this is late 90s. It's not like it was 1965.
Right. Right.
And, I was contracted to get a $2,000 raise. 2000. So yeah. I would have gotten up to 20 grand a year.
Wow.
Again, top 25 market.
Yeah.
People there making six figures. Some. And so, long story short, I went in and I asked for an advance in my raise because I was having to wait tables at night to support myself, to pay rent. And I was on TV during the day. So people would recognize me as I'm passing out their steaks. They're like, aren't you that girl? I was like, yes. How would you like your steak? Medium rare, fine, butter, baked potato.
That's awesome.
But So I just went in and said, listen, can you advance me that raise by like 2 months? He's like, come back in a week. We'll talk about it. I came back. He said, you know, the GM and I have discussed things and we don't think you're worth it right now.
Oh.
And I was like, worth it? What do you mean? And
yeah,
he just went through all the reasons why I was horrible. And I talked too fast and my clothing was not good. My makeup was bad. And my hair was ugly. And I just was too green to be in the market. I'm like, I mean, you hired me and yes, but that wasn't certainly the way to be constructive with
right.
someone who's trying to be in the business. And so when someone tells you, it's one thing if they don't like you, it's another thing if they say that you're not worth it.
Yeah.
And I remember calling my parents and I was devastated because I was working 3 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the weekends. I was early, mid-20s, like
yeah.
should be going out. But no, I was...
This is where luck comes in, right? Everyone hears these stories. It's like, I'm so lucky.
To an extent.
You're working two jobs for no money.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But here's the key. I was going to quit.
Yeah.
And my mom and dad were like, you will never forgive yourself. My mother said, don't do what I did.
Yeah.
She quit too soon. Dad was in the military. Hard to keep a career going as a military spouse. But they talked me out of it. And what if they hadn't? What if they hadn't challenged me to push back and show that guy that I am worth it and that he's a loser boss for saying that to someone? And that was a huge turning point for me in my life to stand up to him.
Let me stop you right there because you say the loser boss. Because people have to realize, right, I'm a boss and I have a line. You talking about it really hit home with me is people come in and ask for raises. And my first line is, I just want to tell you that I'll never be able to pay you what you're worth. Mm-hmm. That's literally my canned line. You're worth so much more. This is an economic decision that I'm making because sometimes I can do it and sometimes I can't.
Sure.
And I think they really appreciate that part of it because I realize how much when you're a CEO, your suggestions become orders and your words are deep.
Yes.
You know, and you don't realize at 20 something that your boss sometimes doesn't know anything about what they're talking about. And there's other issues that they have and they project
this
them.
This was a 68-year-old man who
in Indiana.
And again, I'm making 18 grand a year. We'd already agreed to the raise. It's okay. It worked out the way it was supposed to work.
Right.
And I got up and I left and I got another job. I broke my contract. He made me actually pay back $1,000 that they spent to move me from South Bend. They made me so kind. But you know what? It's okay. I left. I improved myself. And every single time there was a challenge, I said, okay, fine. You have two choices. Do you quit or do you show them that you're not going to take it? And I went from this shy kid who was afraid to look in the mirror to saying, yeah, I got a problem with me.
Yeah.
With a smile.
Right.
And so yes, luck, but like I now know, especially the last year, I've just been through a lot of different stuff.
Yeah.
I now know that I can handle pretty much everything.
Did you ever run into the guy in Indiana Super Bowl?
He retired shortly afterwards, but he stayed in town. And one of my old producers, used to see him at the gym and they'd be on the treadmill. And he'd be like, that's our girl.
Yeah, right there on TV.
That's ours. I was like,
sooner or later, the truth comes out, right?
But it's okay.
That's awesome.
It's fine. Like, I'm thankful
because
I wouldn't have gotten angry enough to go fight.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to give them that much credit, but still, it is up to us how we respond. And my parents helped give me the courage to not let him hurt me further.
Now, your parents are great mentors. Did you have any other mentor along the way?
A couple of bosses in India, people in Indianapolis I worked with, but otherwise very few. And that was hard, I will say. So I got to get better about it, but I'm trying to be a mentor to some of the younger generation.
Well, let me give you one piece of advice from someone who... you know, never had mentors through that period of my life. I learned it's great to mentor people. And, you know, I do business coaching and I give everything I can to help others and empower them. But you always should have three mentors of your own. No matter how successful you are, three people in your life that sit in a position that you want to be in. Whether it's a situational knowledge, experience, even relationship capital. So in my 40s, I started taking on mentors and asking very powerful people to help me, and it changed my life. And they're so willing.
I think that, as you know, trust is such a huge issue in this business. And I've just...
As you look over your shoulder.
I'm like, who's listening? I have truly, especially recently, my circle is so much smaller because even people that I used to look up to and respect or even consider friends, I realize they're not.
It's hard.
So it is hard, but it's healthier because I don't have time for the people I do like. and trust.
Right, let alone.
Much less the ones I don't. So yes, I would love to have more mentors, and I'd love to, and I plan to continue to give back to others because I just didn't have anybody to bounce questions off of. But I, especially with this new job, and I'm up at 3 a.m. and and I'm at work at 4:15, and we're on live 3 hours a day. Like it's
and then the extras
heavy load,
for another
and then
3 hours.
The extras, and you have meetings because everybody else comes in at 9 and they're like, "Hey, you want to meet at 2? I'm like, "No." And they're like, "Yeah, be there at 2. Right. Great. My husband's right. He's like, "Where are you?" And then, yeah, and then I get about 3 hours of sleep because if the World Series is on, I got to go live at 7 a.m. Talk about the, I got to watch that game, especially
right,
certain sports.
I feel
like, yeah. So anyway, point being, I don't have time for the important stuff, much less the others. And so the trials and tribulations recently have been so healthy because it's forced me. I always feel like I don't know. I want to be friends with everyone because I that's me, but I can't.
Yeah.
And so what do you have to sacrifice in order to try to become, I'm not healthy right now, become healthy. What am I chopping out? And I'm chopping out the people who I know actually really don't care about me.
Right.
And it's been healthy.
Yeah. I had to divorce a lot of my friends, and my wife inspired me to do that and surround myself with the right people and the right
it's
ideas.
Hard.
Yeah. Cause they will drain you, and you don't realize that you only need, I always say, if you can count your closest friends on the palm of your hand, you're completely blessed. Well, last question. I know.
No, you're
cause
fine
you do.
On, you're fine on time.
I want to know, your legacy. If you're going to leave your legacy, what is it going to be? The Sage Steele legacy. What is it? You can cry. It helps.
Go ahead, cry. I haven't cried yet today.
I'll cry if you cry.
Once a day, so.
I cry once a day too.
You know, it's funny. I was asked this recently by a college student, and I think the thing I'm probably most proud of is that people always say how nice I treated them. Nicely I've treated them. And recently my dad's neighbor, a 90-year-old man, put two and two together, and he's like, my great-granddaughter interned at ESPN, and she had to do teleprompter, and she said Sage Steele was the only person who introduced herself and came over and thanked her and didn't yell at her, the only on-air person. And he said she loves her, and she made my whole family because she treated our daughter special and not like some kid intern. I didn't know who she was.
Right.
I have no idea who he's talking about to this day. I exchanged cookies and arugula and all that at Christmas with the janitors and with the security guys because I don't know, I'm an army kid at heart, and in order to survive, we had to talk and be friendly. And I mean, I get so hurt sometimes when like you say hi to somebody at the grocery store and they look away. I'm like,
right. You're such a pleaser.
I'm such a pleaser. It's a total terrible disease.
Oh,
being
I
a
had
pleaser,
it.
Terrible
I
disease.
Had it.
I'm trying it. To kick that. But I just hope to be remembered, if nothing else. Forget about the broadcasting and obviously a mother, wife, daughter. But it's the one thing I know that I can say is that I'm a nice, genuine person. And so if you don't like me, that's fine. It's real.
Yeah.
And I hope, you know, you think about, okay, so if you die, who shows up at your funeral? What do they say? That's the one thing I pray is that people remember that I always tried to be kind.
Yeah. It's amazing because I close my eyes and I always say, you know, who's that person that most impacted my life? And my goal is, you know, if this could be one person that I affected that way. And kindness is underrated.
Oh.
And I tell people, look at people in the eyes and smile and your life will get that much better.
But it's a choice.
Yeah.
Like I said to my kids, happiness is a choice. And we all have things. I there's some things now in both of our lives. And it's like, okay, yes, but my father is in chemotherapy every week right now.
Oh.
That's why the move back east. That's why I knew it happened. The day I got the offer is the day he got his diagnosis.
Oh,
literally. So you talk about a blessing. And so that's my, you can always have excuse to be depressed. My father is choosing to be like, let's go get it. So who am I to complain about being tired because I get up at 3 a.m. to talk about sports on national TV?
Right.
Woe is me, right? Happiness is a choice, and I'm choosing happiness.
One of the things I learned changed my life was I'd rather people hate me for who I am than love me for who I'm not.
Totally.
Right. And that was my biggest problem. I wanted everyone to love me. And because I was kind and I am a pleaser, and then it would hurt my feelings that I felt like, how dare you not like me when I'm trying to do for everyone else and I'm sacrificing it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not for me. Like I give everything away.
Totally.
And like even today, you still have that. I was amazed. We're so late and you're so gracious to have us here. And you're just kept saying, I'm sorry. And I'm sitting here going, go home. We'll do this some other time.
No.
You don't ever apologize to me. You're amazing.
That's the thing, is we all,
person.
Everybody, first of all, you know, who knows, in a couple of years, you might not want to talk to me. Oh. Like this window of opportunity closes quickly, especially right. as women in sports. Like, it's just different. So I'm trying to like squeeze it all in as quickly as possible before people say, who? Because that's coming.
It's scary. Well, I look at these coming. Influencers on social media and I've tried to teach these young kids. I said, it's a fading thing. You may have 6 million followers, but when those followers turn 14 or 15, they may not like you anymore.
Right.
And what are you going to do? Because this is a short window to monetize it for yourself at this age and to build a brand. And you do that through giving back. You know, and that's why your brand will last, even if you're done, you know. And I know my clients and business partner, they've done an extraordinary job of building a legacy.
Yeah.
And, you know, 20 years after they're done playing, they still
are in demand, and
because they've given back.
Because they've given back, and they've for the most part tried to be just true to who they are. And what did you say about rather they like you?
Yeah, rather you hate you for who you are than love you for who you're not.
Bring on the hate, guys.
That's right. Well, I don't hate.
Yeah, not you. You can't.
No, never. I love you, and God help you if something happens to my wife, because I'm coming knocking at your door. I love
you.
You
heard it here first.
Yeah, I know your husband is much bigger and better looking than me, but maybe something happened to him too. We'll send him on trips together.
But if nothing else, we're going to eat really, really well.
Dessert, especially.
I'm dessert.
Yeah,
you're the entree.
Exactly. Oh,
we got the whole plan.
Road trip. You're always invited. Warren and I will take you out. This is Dave Meltzer with the wonderful Sage Steele, and it's the Playbook for Entrepreneur. Thank you.
Congrats to you.
Congrats to you. Awesome. Be sure to tune in next Monday, where we feature another story on how a sports icon went from the playing field to the boardroom.